Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 245 of the Last Round Podcast. We've been a little absent the last couple weeks or so, so we apologize for that. But now we are back and jumping straight back into it. Fight reviews this past Saturday, the 26th of August, from Warclaw. Did I say that right? Warsaw? Warclaw. That's a tongue twister right there. Is this Poland?
Yep.
Right? Poland. Let's just say Poland. We'll stay simple. On ESPN Plus for the Unified Heavyweight Championship of the World, Alexander Usyk, 21-0, gets a ninth round TKO over Daniel Dubois. So let's just jump right into the topic for this fight that everybody has been talking about, at least the last couple of days or so. Besides the outcome, obviously Usyk got the win, retained his titles. There was a lot of debate, and there still is debate, even as of this moment, about there was a shot that Dubois landed seemingly on the belt line of Usyk. I've seen, and you tell me, you know, I'll tell you what I've seen so far on, you know, boxing Twitter and all that stuff. I've seen people slow down the videos, take screenshots and stuff, and some of the photos are like, look like he landed on the belt, but the shorts are really high up, but Usyk's bent down. And then other ones show like, oh no, it's like, but like, depending on the angle or the moment that you freeze the frame, it looks weird. But then there's people like Josh Taylor, for example, was saying not a low blow, but other boxing people were saying, oh, that's definitely a low blow. So there's a lot of debate going on. From what you've seen so far, what do you think?
I think low blow, you know, I think it starts low when you see the videos and some of the pictures, and then it kind of like comes up because it's kind of like an uppercut. But the one thing that we didn't get to see is obviously, you know, when the referee goes into the locker rooms and, you know, sometimes when he's in the ring, he'll say, you know, before the fight, like, hey, your shorts are high. This is where I'm going to say is legal and this is where it's going to be illegal. You know, because everyone's body type's different. Everyone's shorts are slightly different. You know, the different styles and stuff like that. So obviously the referee has to look at those and then decide, okay, you know, belt line's good. Below that, you know, is illegal, stuff like that. But from what we've seen, you know, I would say it's illegal. It's low and then comes up because it's an uppercut. So, yeah, I think the referee was justified in, you know, what he did. Usyk kind of played with the clock, you know, took, was it like 2 minutes to get himself right and then came back and, you know, won the fight. You pretty much won every single round.
What percentage do you think, and this is a question as a whole, more of a general question about low blows. What percentage of fighters do you think that get hit with a low blow that don't really get hit with a low blow, like on the family jewels down there, but they sell it using some pro wrestling terms. They sell it to, you know, try to see if they can get a point taken away from their opponent and get some extra time. If you had to put a percentage, if you just had to estimate, what percentage of fighters do you think have like sell it a lot more? And there's not really any pain there, but they're like, oh, well, I know he hit me. I can sell it and try to get some time and maybe a deduction out of it.
I think I'd like to say a low percentage because of the fact of you see some fighters take a low blow and they don't even go down. They're just kind of like, hey, let's keep going. You know, they're winning the fight. I suppose it depends, doesn't it? If you're winning the fight, you want to carry on. You want to keep that momentum going if you're not, you know, really, really badly hurt. But then if you're losing the fight or you're winded, then, you know, yeah, I can see some gamesmanship coming into it. But I would say that, you know, it's a fight sport. It kind of attracts a different mentality of people. So I would like to say hopefully a low percent, you know, really, you know, play that game. I would say more so just if you're losing. Like I said, if you're losing, you want to try to like stop that momentum, right? You want to try and break up what's happening in the fight and, you know, take a few minutes to recuperate, get your health bar back up and, you know, get back into the fight.
Yeah, I could agree with that. So are we in agreement then on the low blow that it was a low blow? Because you've seen it. There's a ton of debate on it online, and you know, we do agree that the referee was justified in saying, yeah, that was low.
I think so. I think more and more people this morning when I was on, you know, Twitter and social media, who've watched it back and they've probably seen other fighters and, you know, respected people in the game kind of side with the fact that, you know, it was a low blow. I think more and more people are turning because you see more and more angles now, more and more pictures. You know, people are slowing down their videos and showing exactly where the impact was and, you know, how it came up eventually and stuff like that. So, yeah, you know, I think it was justified. And I know Frank Warren was in an interview saying that he's going to lobby with the WBA to declare it a no contest. I don't see that happening. I think the referee was correct, you know, in what he did. And Usyk went on to, you know, really just kind of like wipe the floor with Dubois eventually down the line. And, you know, if the fact that, because some people were saying, you know, if Dubois managed to connect with a good body shot like that, then just imagine what Tyson Fury is going to do. Hey, I'm all for that. Keep that momentum. Hopefully Tyson Fury hears that. And then we get to see that big fight for all the gold, all the trinkets, either at the end of the year or the start of next year.
So when Usyk fought Anthony Joshua, there was a moment, I don't know if it was the first or second fight, where Joshua hit him a similar shot that Dubois hit him with. Do you remember where exactly that shot was? Was it around the same area or was it lower? Was it higher? I can't remember.
If I remember right, it was the second fight and it was a body shot. It was a clean shot. I don't remember. And you could kind of see Usyk kind of like backed up a little bit, didn't he? You could see he was kind of like, ooh, that was kind of painful. But for some reason, either AJ didn't notice it. You know, I imagine he probably did since we all did. But he didn't capitalize on it, did he? He didn't seem to jump on him and decide, you know what, like, now's my chance. Let's try to, you know, go for broke and take him out. But yeah, that is seems to be, if there is any chink in Usyk's armor, it does seem to be body shots.
So do we agree or disagree that shot wasn't in the same location or general location that the Dubois shot was?
Higher. I don't think it was illegal, Joshua's. I think it was a legit body shot, if I remember rightly. I don't remember anyone calling saying like, hey, that was illegal. But yeah, it was definitely higher. It was a legal shot.
And then, you know, like you said, Frank Warren has said he's going to lobby the WBA to declare a no contest, but we don't think that's gonna pan out, right?
I'd be super surprised if they did that. You know, I don't. Just due to the fact, obviously, the IBF is the next up, something we're going to touch on later. Hergovich, I believe, the IBF is the next belt that needs to, you know, do the mandatory, which would be Hergovich. So I don't see the WBA really wanting to get involved, get in the way of that. Dubois and Usyk's not a huge paying fight. You know, so I don't see the WBA doing it. If it was a huge like Tyson Fury or Joshua or something like that, then I'm sure the WBC would want 3% of like 60 million or whatever it would be. But this, you know, this is a, you know, a lesser fight. So I don't see them trying to campaign for that when there's probably a bigger fight around the corner.
And like you said, the IBF is prepared to order the mandatory defense between Usyk and Filip Hergovich. I think that fight happens. You know, I know where we want Fury, Usyk, obviously we want that, but Fury is fighting the UFC or MMA, Francis Ngannou in, was it Saudi Arabia? So when do we see Usyk versus Hergovich? First quarter of next year? April, maybe?
Yeah, I could see that if, you know, I'm sure that they may order it, but if you're Team Usyk, you'd probably tell them like, hey, let's just wait to see what happens with, you know, Fury and Ngannou. I'm sure Fury should win that unless something spectacular happens. And then hopefully, you know, those guys can sit down and eventually get something, you know, pounded out. Let's, you know, let's hopefully see that fight at either the end of this year. Well, to be honest with you, if he fights in October, it'll be the start of next year. Give Hergovich a little bit of step-aside money to step aside for the time being. Because it looks to me that, you know, Tyson Fury just chose to fight. He's unbeaten. The fight against Usyk is kind of tricky due to the fact he's so small and agile. He probably wanted to get the fight in with Ngannou just to say like, hey, boxing undefeated world champion against, you know, the UFC champion. He walked away as champion, right?
Big payday.
Yeah, huge payday, because he didn't want to maybe take the on the slight off chance that he loses to Usyk just due to the fact he's so agile. It kind of takes a little bit of the glitz and glamour away, right, of that undefeated record. So get in there, get the Ngannou fight, the huge payday, come back to boxing. Hopefully he fights Usyk at probably the start of next year. And then, hopefully we can see an undisputed heavyweight champion at last.
I think the earliest we see any type of Fury-Usyk potential matchup is the summer of next year. And even then, I still don't think so. I still think Fury is going to be out for at least a year after the Ngannou fight. You know, he's going to have another big payday. You know, the potential earliest is next summer for any Usyk-Fury unification. But even then, I don't have any hope for it. I think Fury is going to be out at least a year and just kind of just enjoy the ride after the big payday with Francis Ngannou. And yeah, I don't see it next year, but I see it at the earliest 2025, but I don't see it next year. It's pretty much what I'm saying.
If we don't get that for whatever reason, I'm hoping that we see the AJ fight. It's an easy fight for Fury, right? If you're being honest, right? You know, Joshua's just a man-made fighter. And I know that
would
sounds
you want to see Fury? Would you want to see Fury, AJ, first, or Fury or Wilder AJ? If you had to choose one,
I think AJ loses both of them. But being a Brit, probably Fury.
Yeah.
Just because I'm British, it's a British fight, you know, like it's an all right. British fight. The Wilder fight would still be big. But, you know, I think, unfortunately, AJ loses both of them.
You think Wilder would go to the UK for that fight, or Saudi Arabia, maybe?
Well, they're saying, aren't they? They're saying Saudi Arabia,
right?
In January now, I think, just due to the fact it's taken a while for stuff to come together.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, probably January if it happens, which it's kind of gone quiet, right, over the last few weeks.
Yeah, but I'm sure when something goes down, it'll, you know, be a huge storm of all that news and stuff like that. But yeah, man, I wish I can understand AJ Fury in the UK, big stadium fight, so that I understand that completely. But I do wish that we had Wilder and AJ over here in the United States. I think that'd be an exciting fight over here. Like in Vegas, I think that would be a big fight.
Yeah, I mean, be a good fight, especially with Deontay Wilder now being kind of based out of LA, right? With Malik Scott.
Yeah, he's been training in LA. Yeah.
Sorry, posted, was it today or last night? He was in there like working on like kind of like range, using his left hand to kind of feel where the opponent is and then coming straight through with the right. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does, you know, with Malik Scott. He's looking like he could be a very good heavyweight trainer. Seems to have a good boxing brain, someone we've had on the show before. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, with that, having a lot more time now with Wilder, whether he can kind of like polish those skills a little bit, because we all love a Wilder fight, right? You know, because at any moment he can just unleash that right hand and, you know, it's lights out, it's game over. So
lights out.
Yeah, you know, it'd be good to have him back. And hopefully, you know, it'd be good to just get all three of those active. You know, AJ active, Wilder active, Fury active.
I think we're past the consistent activity for all three. Especially since like a lot of MMA guys and, you know, a lot of outside people outside of the boxing space have started to come into boxing to get the paydays and, you know, and all that. I think all these guys, the consistent activity has been severely decreased, maybe for people, not definitely for Fury, Wilder, and those guys. Usyk and AJ, I think they're still pretty consistent. Obviously, they're still pretty consistent, but I think we in terms of the activity, consistent activity, the new generation is about to turn the page for like heavyweights and stuff. So we're not there yet, but we're getting there. We're definitely getting there. Also, this past weekend from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tulsa, Oklahoma on ESPN Plus, Efe Ajagba against DQ. I guess DQ win, is that how you want to say it? Over Han Kosobutski. I think I said that right. I probably didn't. This was for the WBC International Heavyweight Championship of the World. That's how you want to say it. So there were just numerous low blows from Han Kosobutski to Efe Ajagba, and the referee just called it for a DQ. So do you think the guy just did it on purpose? Like he just knew, like, forget it. You know, what do you think?
It looks like it. It looked like he was kind of like getting annoyed. And then, you know, just like on the inside of the clinch, just like, boom, just unleashed a big shot to the balls. That was the story of the weekend, right? You know, if we're going to call Daniel Dubois' shot an illegal shot, then we've seems like a lot of heavyweight fights, you know, and a lot of ball shots. But kind of surprising because I thought Kosobutski, if that's how you pronounce it, I thought he was going to win this undefeated in there against Ajagba, who is a little bit robotic still at times. And I thought he was going to come away with the victory, but he just seemed to get like kind of like annoyed with Ajagba and the holding, the clinching and stuff like that. And then just couldn't stop, just, you know, nailing him below the belt line. So, you know, Ajagba gets the victory and, you know, off he goes with, you know, top rank, have quite a few up and coming, you know, heavyweights in like, you know, Jared Anderson, Milton, Ajagba. So it's going to be interesting times in the heavyweight division for top rank.
How old is Ajagba now? I feel like he's been around such a long time. Is he like what, mid to late 30s? Is he older?
I think
than
so.
That?
It seems like he's been there like on the up and coming, you know, standard for some time. And I think he kind of like turned to the pro ranks, you know, later than most people. But, you know, in the heavyweights, you can kind of get away with that, right? Because, you know, in general, it's, you don't really get that kind of like man strength and stuff like that till like later in your career. So, you know, a lot of the heavyweights are really like, you know, your early 30s, mid 30s and stuff like that. Kind of the same as the UFC now. A lot of those guys seem to hit their peak, you know, at that time in their career as well. He's younger. He's 29.
The job is 29?
Yeah. Well,
why do I feel like the
Luis Ortiz 29 though?
Yeah, right. Do you think we've seen the last of Luis Ortiz? Do you think he comes back?
You never know because, you know, when he fought, was it Charles Martin? He looked shaky, but got the victory right in the end. So I could see him, you know, coming back out, especially with, I remember when he fought, was it Deontay Wilder and, you know, he needed the money to help pay for like the medical care for his daughter. So maybe we could see him around a little bit longer just to, you know, cement some money for, you know, his family and to obviously help her pay for the medical fees and stuff like that, which obviously aren't cheap in the US.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. And then in the co-main event, Jared Anderson gets the TKO in the fifth round over Andre. There's an Andre. We need to start taking like a linguistics class or something to pronounce all these names. Andre Rudenko, 35-7. This is for the WBO International Heavyweight Championship of the World. Jared Anderson, like I said, I mentioned earlier, next generation of heavyweights. Jared Anderson's in that next crop. First off, what'd you think about this performance? And 5 years from now, is Anderson going to be one of the elites of the heavyweight division?
I would say so. Everybody that, you know, all the heavyweights that spar with him and stuff like that, I'll say, you know, how good he is. And he's still young in terms of, you know, being a heavyweight. I thought this was a pretty good performance from him. I thought it showed something a little bit different because he came in and really went to the body of Rutchenko instead of like headhunting, you know, like a lot of, you know, up-and-coming fighters do. They kind of get focused like straight on the head and kind of negate the rest of the body, you know. I thought Jared did really well doing that, switching, going upstairs, switching stances, going to southpaw. I thought he looked really good. I thought his jab was good from both stances. And then he kind of like switched it up to the body and head constantly. And for somebody of the age of 23, a relative baby in terms of heavyweight, I think they could really just keep going like they're doing, you know, just slowly but surely just coming through. And like we touched on before, you know, Wilder, Fury, AJ, those guys at the top, you know, it's not long until you know, probably coming to retirement, right? You know, Chisora, Dillian White, all those names. And Jared Anderson's in a really, really, really good spot if he just keeps going like he is, because there's no need to rush him. He's still relatively young.
You know, we talk about the age of this next generation of fighters, at least in the heavyweight division, Jared Anderson, and how the current crop, I guess, Wilder, Fury, you know, Chisora and all those guys, you know, they're obviously on their way. I don't want to say on their way out, but, you know, they're the next ones out the door, and then the next generation comes in just like anything. Let me ask you this specific question. Who do you think out of the current crop of heavyweights will be the last one to like completely retire? Like, who's going to try to hold on the most?
Fury.
You think so? You think it's Fury?
Just because of the fact that he kind of needs.
I'm talking about real fight. Like, I'm not. I feel like Fury will hang around, but more like Mayweather-esque with these exhibitions and stuff like that. But I'm talking about where they still try to test themselves in legitimate fights. Chisora?
I don't know, because he's one of the older ones, isn't he? But he is,
but like, I still like feel like he'll stay around.
Yeah, he doesn't look like he ever wants to retire. That's a hard question, because AJ doesn't really need the money. I think Tyson will stay, but like you say, I think he'll be more for like exhibition type stuff. Wilder, I think, is probably like a defeat or two away from probably retiring, because he's made some really, really good money. He seems like he's more of a family man. I think he's just really coming back for like one or two paydays, and then he'll probably disappear. Chisora should really be going out the door anyway. I think Dillian White's body is going to tell him that he needs to retire. I think he's probably like, depending on what happens with his drugs ban, maybe a defeat away from retiring, because he just looks so much slower, so much leggy compared to what he used to be like.
It's a hard one, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I think Fury, but like, I think you're correct. And, you know, I think he'll just kind of take the biggest paydays that he can find for like exhibition style, which, you know, you can't really fault him for that, right? You know, he's in there like risking his life. So, you know, why not try to get as much money as with the least resistance as possible? But I hope he still fights, you know, AJ and those guys before he retires.
Yeah. Yeah. But now, Anderson, like you said, I mean, Top Rank does have a great eye for talent. So, and they have Anderson under their promotional contract here, so they're definitely going to try to hold on to him for a while and see how he pans out.
Some of the best matchmakers in the business as well.
Yeah, they're good, man. They're good. I mean, when you get big enough in terms of your career and money wise, you know, it's, they don't have the best track record of keeping you, but to develop you and get you to that point, they're really good. They're, you know, you want to sign with somebody at the beginning of your career, it's probably Top Rank. You know, they're the ones, definitely. And also this past weekend here in Los Angeles, Commerce, California, which is just outside of Los Angeles, from the Commerce Casino on UFC Fight Pass, a 360 promotions card, Tom Lawler's 360 promotions card, headlined by Callum Walsh, who gets the, I guess, victory in the fourth round, a technical decision. He is now 8-0 over Juan Jose Velasco, who takes the fifth loss of his career. This was for the WBC Silver Super Welterweight title. So it gives him, Callum Walsh, some type of a trinket title to kind of put him in some type of significant position in the WBC rankings and all that at 154 pounds. So what did you think about Callum Walsh's performance from the Commerce Casino?
I thought it was a decent performance. You know, Juan Jose Velasco, just, you know, I think he was a last kind of like minute opponent. Just didn't want to come out after the fourth. Essentially, just said he was too tired, taking a bit of a beating, and just kind of decided to end that day on his stool. So, no, not much that Callum could have done, really. I think he did the job that was put in front of him. A lot of hype behind him, you know, Dana White, Howlerhead, you know, Tom Loeffler, you know, Jorge Masvidal was there, other UFC fighters. A lot of people came out, you know, for this show for Callum, but so far he hasn't really caught my attention. And I do wonder why he's got all this fanfare behind him so far. But maybe we'll see that, you know, as he steps up the levels and gets in there with some, you know, like bigger names and stuff like that. Maybe we'll see you know, what he has in the arsenal, and you know why, you know, Tom Loughner and Dana White and all these, you know, big brands are, you know, pushing him as much as they are, because at the minute I don't really see it. I don't see what it is that he has that he's not really going in there and, you know, doing like a Teofimo Lopez performance, you know, like knocking people out and doing stuff like that. And he is relatively quiet on the mic, you know, so I don't see yet what it is.
I think that we've had this conversation before, but 360 Promotions, Tom Loughner and stuff. Obviously, when HBO was still on, he still had a partnership with them, Superflies and all that. It was, you know, he had partnerships with like Chocolatito Gonzalez, the Superfly division and all that. He had, you know, Triple G to an extent and all that. You know, and obviously 360 is not where it was 7, 8 years ago, 6 years ago and all that. And Callum Walsh is, you know, if you think about somebody with Tom Loughner and 360 and that, you know, that whole team, you're going to think about he's the only fighter you can think of, right? Like, oh, Callum Walsh, like as of right now, because of the hype and, you know, the people that are, he's associated with Dana White, UFC branding in a way. Dana White has tweeted about him, has put out social posts about him. So, you know, as of right now, he's still proving himself, if that's how you want to look at it. So, you know, he still has to prove a lot of people that he belongs. But I mean, so far he's winning. But it's just like anything, you know, like look at Berlanga. You know, Berlanga had a lot of hype on him because he was knocking everybody out, and then he was with that rapper Fat Joe and, you know, a lot of other people and like celebrities and Hollywood culture and stuff. He, you know, there was a lot of people talking about him, and Top Rank was pushing him in New York and all that. And he was knocking everybody out in the first round. So he got a lot of hype behind him for that. And then, you know, obviously like anything, you step up your competition and then he, you know, do we want to use the word exposed? You know, I don't think he got exposed. I think it's just, you know, he leveled up and he started fighting, you know, a decent level of guys and started testing him. So it was a little different. You know, and Callum Walsh, you know, eventually he's going to get to somebody where like, oh, okay, now this is definitely a test for him. But it's because it, you know, it's just like anything. Like if we talk about Ryan Garcia, you know, his popularity and his popularity and the hype behind him exceeds his talent. But every boxing fan knows that. The casual fan base doesn't know that. Because there's a lot of casual fans who are like, oh yeah, Ryan Garcia is one of the best guys. Like, well, yeah, he's one of the most popular guys. And, you know, he's good. It's not that he's not talented. But the boxing fan base knows, like, okay, right now your popularity exceeds your talent. And I think that's where just Callum Walsh is at right now. So we're just going to have to, you know, just like anything, you sit back and spectate and see how it develops, you know? And he's 360 Promotions and, you know, UFC Fight Pass and all that stuff or whatever. They're putting a lot of resources into Callum Walsh to try to see if he pans out, you know? Because what if he does and then Dana White starts going to like these fights and, you know, Callum Walsh gets bigger fights and bigger people. And I mean, you don't think Dana White's going to keep talking about him? Like the fact that Dana White would talk about him on the social channels and interviews, it's already getting Callum Walsh a lot of fanfare and a lot of eyeballs. So that's what it is right now, you know, but he just has to keep winning and show people like, yeah, look, I level up and I beat this guy and I keep going and just keep trying to win. And now he's got that WBC silver super welterweight trinket title. So he's in some type of position in under 10 fights too. So that means they're trying to get him there as quickly as they can, right?
No, 100%. I just don't see at the minute him beating, you know, the likes of like Tim Zhu, Brian Mendoza, Fundora, Charlo. I think that he'd struggle with those guys at the minute. So it's going to be... I would put the brakes on it a little bit, you know, because I think he's 36 in the world on BoxRec.
I thought you were going to say he's 36 years old. I was like, no, he's not. There's no way he's 36. Right.
Yeah, so, yeah, only time will tell. Only time will tell, right?
I guess. Moving on, fight preview this upcoming Saturday, the 2nd of September, from the Manchester Arena in Manchester on Sky Pay-Per-View. Liam Smith, 33-3-1, goes up against Chris Eubank Jr., 32-3, on the main event of a Sky pay-per-view card, like I just said. I like this fight. I think Smith is going to pull it out. And I think Smith has really found like a second wind in his career. What was the last fight that Smith was in? And
used the original fight, Chris Eubank Jr., the first one.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a rematch, right? That's what I knew of.
So January the 21st, Liam Smith won by fourth round TKO.
So I think Smith's going to win again. I mean, am I wrong? What do you think? Or do you think Eubank wins and then this becomes a trilogy? What are you thinking?
No, I mean, I the first time round, I thought just Liam Smith has just been in there with the better opponents, more experienced, the better boxer. Chris Eubank just has always been a kind of like a little bit one-dimensional and always, in my opinion, would win his fights just due to being fitter and throwing in more punches. It was never really like, you know, well executed. It was just, he would just throw and he would throw so many punches. He would just kind of like wear people down. Whereas, you know, Liam Smith's been in there with some of the best fighters in the world. You know, he's been in there with, like, you know, like your Munguias, and back in 2016, right? 7 years ago, he was in there with Canelo. And I remember a lot of people that I work with, a lot of people over here who were impressed with Liam Smith in that fight, even though he lost by KO to Canelo, they liked the performance that he put on, the same as when he fought Munguia. A lot of people who were fans of both of those said to me, they were like, hey, dude, that guy's game. Like, he's a really good fighter. He put up a really good performance against those two. And that's something that Chris Eubank Jr. has never experienced. And I think just due to all of those things combined, I think Liam Smith probably wins again. I think Eubank will probably be a little bit more tentative. I think Smith stops him late this time just due to, you know, what happened the first time. I'm sure Eubank's not going to, you know, kind of showboat, go on the ropes and stuff like that and leave himself open.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was a very good description of Liam Smith's talent and skill level. You're right. He's been in there with the higher caliber of opponent. I mean, that Canelo fight, like you said, it was years ago now. You know, it was a while back. They fought in Texas, I think, Dallas.
And even bigger than that, you know, Chris Eubank's not been in there with Jesse Vargas. Liam Smith has.
That's correct, yeah. Smith has been in there with the best of the best. Yeah, no, Smith is I think it ends the same. Do you think it ends the same? You think he stops him again? Is it against a stoppage?
Yeah, I think he stops him again. I think it'll be in the late rounds when Eubank will probably tire a little bit just through, you know, throwing so many punches and stuff like that. And I think, because the thing is with Liam Smith, he's very good at like catching and countering. And I don't know whether he's going to set a trap for Eubank, let Eubank kind of come onto him and then kind of poach him. Kind of, because if you go back to when he fought Anthony Fowler, it looks like Fowler's doing really, really well. And, you know, Liam Smith does start a little bit slow at times, and he kind of like leads you into a false sense where you think you're winning. And then he kind of just jumps on you and pounces on you after that. So I don't know if that's a trap that he's going to do this time around, or, you know, last time he kind of just jumped on Eubank from the off and then just, you know, caught him, had him up against the ropes, and Eubank Jr. didn't know what to do after that. So it's going to be an interesting fight, but I think it's going to go the same way. I think Liam Smith wins by stoppage.
Yeah, I could agree with that. I agree with that. But, you know, Eubank's obviously hoping for the win, because then it turns into a trilogy. So we'll see. How much is a pay-per-view price? Do we know?
That's a good question. Bucks? I haven't seen how much. I would imagine. Yeah, I'd imagine it's going to be like 20, like £19.99. No, pounds, right. Obviously.
Right, right, right.
I haven't seen anywhere yet. If anything, with it being, you know, like a boxer show, I think it would end up on ESPN Plus. But I haven't seen anything advertised yet.
Well, Sky has a partnership with ESPN Top Rank, right?
Yeah, ESPN Top Rank. So I'm thinking that if it is going to be on over here, it'll be ESPN Plus for us stateside.
Right. And also on the card, Frazier Clark, 7-0, goes up against Dave Allen, 21-5-2. What do you think about this matchup?
It's interesting because they've sparred each other, and Dave Allen, at times when you watch him, he is really skillful for a heavyweight. But he just has that. He's just very hard to nail down, because you watch him in some fights where he looks really good, and then in other fights he's just, he looks terrible. He comes in like overweight and stuff like that. Like, he really is his own worst enemy at times. And I know that it could be down to, you know, problems that he has with like mental health and, you know, like self-confidence and stuff like that. It's like at times that he just like purposely goes off the rails, so he has an excuse for why he didn't perform well, if that makes sense.
It gets, you think so?
Do you know how when you see those certain people where they start to like make excuses, you know, when they've, you know, when they're involved in something, or, you know, it gets to the point where it's like fight week, and then like he'll self-sabotage himself, so he has a reason why he didn't perform well. I get that at times with him. Like, he gets to him, like he gets to fight week, and then he'll just like pile on a load of weight, or, you know, he won't train, he won't spar. And then, you know, if and when he does lose, he's like, well, you know, this happened fight week. It's like they give themselves like a built-in excuse, because they don't want to go in there at 100% and then lose at 100%, if that makes sense.
I'm kind of confused.
Because if they lose at 100%, they've lost to the better man. Whereas if they self-sabotage themselves, they can say, well, I lost because, you know, I didn't spar, or I was injured, or, you know, I ate a load of food or something like that, you know, on the sly. So they already have a built-in excuse, because they don't want to be like, well, you know, I was 100%. I had a good camp. There was nothing wrong. And I still lost.
Right. No, okay. I can see that. But I mean, like, we see that all the time in boxing. Not just boxing, even MMA, combat sports. Even there's been times where fighters don't make any excuses after the fight, and they say, no, my training camp was good, everything, and I just didn't, you know, just better man tonight. He was a better man. That was it. And then as time goes on and they do interviews in the subsequent months and all that, then the tune starts changing a little bit. Like, well, yeah, like during my training camp, I remember I was sick for like a week, and I didn't really train too well. And, you know, slowly but surely, everything always, you know, from Canelo to the, like, you know, the Superfly division and stuff like that, it happens. You know, that, I mean, that's just the nature of the game, you know. And some, like, I think Spence, you know, Errol Spence right now, you know, in the losing effort to Terrence Crawford, like, did he, I feel like in the post fight and so far in any interviews he's had after the fight, he said that he hasn't really made any excuses. I think he just said that, oh yeah, you know, Crawford was a better man. That was it. He might have said that, you know, yeah, you know, I just can't make 147 anymore. I need to go off 154. But, you know, it always comes out. It always comes out with these fighters, you know, and it is what it is. You know, even if they say after, like I said, hey, you know, yeah, I didn't have any issue during training camp or anything. I was prepared as I can be. I just lost, you know, some months pass and, oh, well, I didn't train for like 2 weeks for this or that, or I had a really bad weight cut. You know, it just, that's what happens. That's what happens. But whatever, we will see. News and notes section of this week's episode of the Last Round Podcast. Shakur Stevenson will have his chance to be a 3-division world champion. The WBC has ordered, and let's take this with a grain of salt, they've ordered a lot of fights over the X amount of years or whatever, insert number, and they've never panned out. So don't get excited when these sanctioning bodies order big fights like this, because 60-70% of the time they don't happen. But the WBC has ordered Stevenson versus Frank Martin to fight for its vacant lightweight title, according to ESPN. There are ongoing discussions between Top Rank, which promotes Stevenson, and Martin, who is managed by Al Haymon and PBC. I don't see it. I don't see this happening, especially because it's two different promoters, two different networks. I don't have any hope for this one. What do you think?
I think if it doesn't go ahead, it's PBC. I know that Shakur seems to want to fight everybody. He wants to test himself. He wants to, you know, go down as a, you know, multi-weight, multi-time champion. You know, he seems that sort of guy, especially off, you know, like Frank Martin's last performance. If I was Shakur, you'd be pretty confident that you'd get in there and do the job. So I think if anybody or any team is the the reason that it doesn't happen, it'll be same as usual. It'll be a PBC.
So has Haney vacated all of his titles now?
I don't believe so. I believe they're still in talks with Lomachenko to do that. Or if not, it's going to be Loma against Kambosos. It tends to be the rumor.
Right, right. Because I mean, you know, the WBC. I think the WBC here is just preparing that the belts or their belt with Haney is going to be vacant. So they're doing this now to prepare. Like, okay, let's see if it's vacant. But what if Haney doesn't vacate? He's like, oh, I'm going to do one more fight. You know, are they going to just, oh, okay, we'll just do an interim title? Like, they just changed the wording. Like, oh, it's for the interim title. Like, what do you mean interim title? Your guy's still active. You know, like, I don't know. There's so much confusion with all these sanctioning bodies and titles and, you know, saying, oh, yeah, it's for the interim championship. Like, what? Interim world championship? Like, what are you talking? What? No, that shouldn't. Take that away. Like if people like, you know, it's just a way for them to get their sanctioning fees and all that. And then, you know, I don't know. There's just too much confusion with all this. And it just, but like we've been told before, and obviously it makes sense for publicity and television purposes, having some type of title attached to it, especially if it's some type of world title that they can manage to have in the advertisement and publication. It legitimizes it to casual fans and other people who might not be as savvy to the sport as we are. Like, oh, it's a world title fight. These guys must be really good. You know, marketing makes sense. So that's why it happens. So we will see. And also, undisputed super middleweight champion Savannah Marshall is the latest female fighter in a sense, but mostly female fighter, to make the jump into mixed martial arts. As she announced last week that she is signing with the Professional Fighters League, also known as PFL, which Clarissa Shields has been signed to for a little bit. Marshall did say that she expects her first MMA fight, let's say MMA fight, not boxing fight, MMA fight will come sometime next year. I mean, I don't see why this happened unless they offered it. Or obviously, they offered her a decent amount of money. And they want a Shields-Marshall matchup in the MMA world, right? I mean, that's the only reason she probably signed. Because I don't think Marshall doesn't strike me as she wanted to do that. And I'm sure PFL approached her and like, hey, we'll offer you this. And she the money was pretty decent or pretty good. And she's like, oh, you know what? Maybe it. For that type of money, it's worth it, right? Because Marshall doesn't strike me as a type like, oh, let me jump into MMA. I think she got presented with an offer and she saw like, oh, I can fight Shields and MMA world and get another payday for that and still fight her in a rematch in boxing. So it's like three different paydays, right? Because that's the only plan that I see.
Yeah, 100%. I think that, you know, just the war of words between them both and the build-up to that fight. I'm sure the PFL saw that and, you know, they already have Clarissa Shields on the books and they think to themselves, you know, who else can we bring over here that would kind of be like a fair fight, you know? We've dragged Clarissa from the boxing world. Why not bring Savannah from the boxing world and let's, you know, do like a, you know, Savannah won in the amateurs, Clarissa won in the pros. Like, okay, let's have a third and, you know, final fight in, you know, MMA. I'm sure that's how they're going to sell it. But I think Clarissa Shields will be far too big and too strong for Savannah Marshall to do anything. I think that'll be super one-sided, to be honest with you. I think Shields is just a lot stronger physically than Savannah, and I think she mops her in MMA.
Yeah. It is intriguing, though. I got to give it to them, like, in terms of intriguing and getting people like, oh, I want to check this out. Throwing in an MMA, I think it's going to have some people watch. And it's going to be a lot of boxing fans want to watch that. It's like, oh, these are two boxers who are fighting in MMA. So, you know, like, but like you said, Clarissa Shields is stronger. So, yeah, I'm going to be very interested to see this. I am intrigued by an MMA matchup between these two. So that's definitely something to look forward to. And then as confirmed by Matchroom Boxing, Robert Hellenius, who just fought AJ, Anthony Joshua, was found to have an adverse finding during a drug test that led to his knockout loss in the Joshua fight. Matchroom said that Helenius was tested by VADA, the Voluntary Anti-Doping Agency, the day before the fight with Anthony Joshua on August 12th. Helenius, like everybody knows, was a late replacement for the original opponent, Dillian White, who also tested positive for a banned substance, which took him out of the fight. We talked about this when this happened, not on the show, but on the side, but like Robert Helenius had fought like a week or two before the AJ fight. So he was already kind of, it was like a really small card, no publicity. You got to look at it, but like this, we're not accusing anything, but you know, just kind of speculating here, allegedly, you know, how many fighters do we think like that don't have these big platforms and they fight on these small cars and they're not subject to this testing and stuff are, you know, allegedly doing stuff, to increase their performance of some type. Because they don't have the scrutiny that the people on these big platforms have. And, you know, it's not like AJ, it's like Ruiz, when he got the chance, Helenius gets the call, like, hey, do you want to replace Dillian White to fight AJ? We'll pay you this. And Helenius is like, oh, yeah, I made $10,000 of this fight I just fought 2 weeks ago. And you're going to pay me $500,000? Hell yeah, I'm going to do that. You know, and he might have known allegedly that he had something in his system, or some of these fighters probably know, but they're going to be like, well, I'd rather take the payday. I don't care. You know, they're not, I mean, you just get a suspension, right? Like a lot of times they don't dock the pay. They're not going to take, hey, we're going to take 30% of your pay unless it's in the contract. But usually we don't hear about that. I mean, doesn't that sound likely or reasonable?
Yeah, exactly. You never hear of them losing any of their purses. So like what, a 6 month ban, a 12 month ban, a 2 year ban. It's if you're a boxer, you know, it's kind of worth it, right? You know, if you're going from like you said, 10, 20 grand a fight, you get a chance at 500,000.
And I just said 500 because that's just a number I threw. I don't know what he got, but
yeah, exactly. So it's a crazy spot. And I think, you know, no offense to any of the boxers that we've had on the show here, but I imagine there's a high percentage that are on something, because if you drive down the street now to LA Fitness, there's a high percentage of people that are on steroids in there just to look good.
Yeah. LA Fitness, for our fans, listeners across the world, is a gym, a big chain gym in the United States. So, but you're right though. You walk in there, like something like an LA Fitness, people are jacked, but are they really jacked, or is it a performance enhancing?
And that's just to look good, you know, pull women, just to look good at pool parties and stuff like that. You've got runners that take it to get fast times. So you think people are going to take it when they're in the ring for a fight, potentially for their life? Fucking
right.
Fucking 100% they are.
100%.
The more that they win, the more money that they get. So, and we know that the lack of testing is appalling because it's expensive and all the money goes to the fighters and stuff like that. And the promotion, there isn't much left over to spend, you know, $30,000 per bout to test everybody. And there's what, you just think, if you do like a PBC show, there's 10 to 15 fights. That's between $300,000 to $450,000 to test everybody. There isn't that type of money.
It's a lot of money. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of money because like what, 80, is it like 80% of the money on a promotion goes to the fighters,
right?
And most of that goes to the main events,
right?
There isn't that much money left over to do it like the UFC is, because the UFC obviously are paying their fighters a lot less. It's something like 60%.
You know what? That's a good point that you raise, is that, you know, regardless of the business model of UFC boxing and stuff like that, you know, some people agree with the fighters should get most of the share of the pie, and then some people look at the UFC's model and business model and say, no, you know, like in order to keep the sport alive and growing and developing, you need to have some type of business model like the UFC to succeed and sustain the life of the sport. You know, pros and cons to each argument, but some people are like, want testing, and we want testing for everything to make a clean sport and everybody fair and not cheaters and stuff like that. I mean, if you ask people that question, do you want something like the UFC model? Like, hey, do you want boxing to institute testing for every single fight on all these cards from the main event to the first bout that's non-televised? Do you want testing for all those 8-9 fights that might be on the card and 5 of them, 4 of them are non-televised, even those fighters are tested? Is that what you want, like to keep the health of these fighters at its peak? Because if that's the case, you're right. These, it's the promoters who usually take the financial risk on these, and they pay for them. And a lot of times we've been told this by people in the sport and in the business. So yeah, it's just expensive. So a lot of times they just kind of say, oh no, we don't need to, unless they get like a lot of, it's a big headline fight or big mainstream fight. But you know, would you want that and have the fighters sacrifice pay and then have more pay go to the promoter, you know, in the network? Or do you want all the money to go to the fighters in the main event and you sacrifice the testing? I mean, isn't that an intriguing, reasonable question to ask? What do you think?
No, it is. It's like you say, it's people complain about the UFC model, but with that model, you know, you're getting testing, you're getting, you know, stuff like the PI where the fighters can go there and learn about nutrition and get trained for free and get the meals for free and stuff like that. So it does have its, it does have its perks. And also the UFC is a flipping model, right? It's like a big machine. So, you know, a lot of those guys, like if you look at how many boxers, if you look at a small boxer, like a smaller name boxer, and how many followers they have, it's nothing compared to someone of the equivalent stature in the UFC. They have thousands and thousands of followers, and then they can take that brand that they're from and create something. You know, they can do a YouTube channel, you know, they can create a podcast and stuff like that. And, you know, some of them do. They have a successful time when they retire, even though they weren't world champions, because they've taken that platform that they're given by Dana White in the UFC and they create something for afterwards. And that's really what some of those guys should be doing. And I think there is things, definitely there is lots of things that the, you know, boxing could take from that. But until we have essentially like one entity, you know, which is never going to happen. We're never going to see Golden Boy, Top Rank, Matchroom, PBC, all become one.
You know what? Last year, I would have said that, but like, yeah, I don't see that anytime soon. But with Endeavor, who has bought the UFC a couple years back and now purchased the WWE, and I mean, I don't think it's in the realm of, out of the realm of possibility that Endeavor would try to make it into the boxing space in the coming years and look at like somebody like Top Rank or, you know, Golden Boy or something. It's like, hey, maybe we might want them a part of our business portfolio too. Have some MMA, WWE, boxing, you know, I could see that. I could totally see that. But, and their company is supposed to, I think it's called like New Whale Inc. or something. If you look on the SEC filings over here in the United States, the Securities Exchange Commission. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. I think last year, like you said, I wouldn't have said, oh no, I don't see that. But with somebody like Endeavor buying the WWE and now having the UFC, and then they have, I think that Hollywood agency, it's a big Hollywood agency. I think that's possible, man, in the coming years. I could see it.
I mean, I could see it in terms of if they could get like a foothold, like if they were able to purchase like, I don't know, two or three of them, you know, to the point where they've got enough power to really leverage everything in the boxing sphere and then eventually take over all of them, you know, all of the three or four biggest promotions. Because then you can do what the UFC do now. You can put all the big fights together. You know, you do the pay-per-views, you know, you've got everything all on one channel. And just imagine all of that on ESPN. They could create their own channel after that. Have WWE, boxing, and UFC all on a pay-per-view channel, their own channel. That'd be a...
And those are all different. In a way, they're all different fan bases. And they would all sign up for that channel. Because there's a lot of crossover between those fan bases too. Especially with pro wrestling, there's a lot of combat sports fans that I know, MMA and boxing, who are pro wrestling fans. So you're right. I think when you get a channel like that, a streaming channel, especially that's on demand and all that stuff, I think there's a good chance of success for that. I really do.
Only time, like we said before, we'll have to wait and see, I guess, you know, because I know that Dana White did talk about getting into, you know, was it Zuffa boxing, you know, many years ago. And I know that he is kind of involved with 360 promotion from some of the fighters and some of the managers and coaches that I know that kind of go to those shows and stuff like that. I know that they have spoken about that he's kind of involved in it in the shadows, shall we say?
Yeah. Yeah, in the shadows. Yeah, we've heard that. We definitely heard that. And also, Tim Tszyu has set up his inaugural title defense before officially claiming that the title he's defending, No Limit Boxing, which is a promotional entity down there in Australia, announced that Tim Tszyu, who's the reigning WBO interim, like I said, interim, super welterweight champion, will be elevated the moment Jermell Charlo steps into the ring to fight Canelo Alvarez. And Tszyu is looking to fight on October 15th, as of right now, Brian Mendoza, who's the interim WBC champion at 154 pounds. I mean, you know, it is what it is. So is this really an undisputed versus undisputed fight when one sanctioning body said, hey, as soon as the bell rings, you're not going to be champion? So, I mean, right before the bell rings, like, okay, it is undisputed, but like, are they really, you know, is it really an undisputed? I don't know. I guess marketing purposes, you know, it works out, but they don't care. The titles don't really mean anything here. Like, these guys, Canelo's been above the titles for so long, but it helps the marketing of it too. This is great for marketing and the television partners or Showtime. It's great for them. It's great for them. Like, oh, these guys, this guy has all the titles at 154 pounds, two weight divisions below. And Canelo's like one of the best fighters and box office in the world. So marketing purposes, it works. So I see it. I definitely see it. And after 19 years in the ring, a long career, almost 20 years, the former two-division champion, Kiko Martinez, announced on Twitter that he's hanging up the gloves and going into the sunset to retirement. Martinez, who's ultimately has become, arguably, let's say arguably, instead of ultimately, the most accomplished Spanish fighter of all time from Spain, at 44 wins and 12 losses and 2 draws. He's fought Carl Frampton, Leo Santa Cruz, Josh Warrington, Kid Galahad. He was one of those, like, you couldn't call him a journeyman because, like, you know, he had some significant losses, but then you put him in with other guys and he pulled out the wins. He figured it out, especially against Josh Warrington. He definitely created a fan base for him, of the hardcore boxing fan, right?
No, definitely. You know, I think, you know, I was a fan of him. I think all the Brits kind of came to love him from the amount of times that he fought in the UK. I think it was like 11 times or something he came over. And I think he held the European title like 32 times or something like that. Obviously, I'm over exaggerating there, but he held it a lot of times. Yeah, just literally one of those guys, like, has gloves, will travel. Ronnie, he's been all the different countries he's fought in, all the big fights he's gone in, all the times he's gone in as a B-side and sprung a surprise. He's definitely somebody that I think all of us as fans just admire. And we kind of wished that a lot of fighters were still like that, still had that same attitude, right?
Right, right. And there's one more thing that we didn't touch on. Nico Ali Walsh, who's top rank, actually suffered his first defeat as a professional this past weekend in Oklahoma. And a majority decision loss. And if you look at the video when they announced the decision, he looked like he was extremely surprised. Like, oh man, I thought I had it. So I think that's a pretty significant part of the news in the sport here. I mean, Nico Ali Walsh, grandson of Muhammad Ali. So we'll see. But he's still young. I think Top Rank can still navigate him. But, you know, just like we talked about Berlanga and all the other fighters, you know, you're going to have to level up and you're going to start fighting better competition, just like any sport. And you're going to have to sink or swim, right?
100%. Yeah, eventually you get to that time, right? There's only so long that they can kind of wrap you in cotton wool and keep you away from everybody. Sooner or later, you're going to get in there and you're going to have a challenge. And unfortunately, you know, this time, you know, Nico Ali Walsh, you know, didn't come out on top, but, you know, he's still young enough that he can go away, rebuild, and, you know, come back, it just, you know, when you turn pro and you don't, you have that lack of real amateur experience, you know, you're still kind of like learning a lot on the job. And that was the case, I think, obviously, you know, last night.
Absolutely. So once again, guys, thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Last Round. We apologize for the absences we've had the last couple of weeks. We'll try to get you some more shows, some more bonuses and stuff. We're talking with some guests for some interviews and stuff. So trying to get them into the schedule and coordinate with them. So hopefully we can get some interesting guests on soon. But once again, we appreciate you guys for listening to this week's episode of The Last Round. Before we completely sign off, Mike, once again, let them know where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. Be sure to join us next week. We'll be reviewing the Liam Smith, Chris Eubank Jr. rematch.
Rematch. We'll see. We called Liam Smith TKO KO again. So let's see if it happens again. So once again, for my co-host Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.